When microbes value our food plants as much as we do, protecting crops from pathogens becomes problematic. Despite copious use of pesticides, 15% of global crop production is lost to pre-harvest plant disease. However, a deeper study of how plants defend themselves against these pests and pathogens may be a saving grace for global food security and sustainable farming. Jeff Dengel discusses what efforts are being made to re-engineer plant immunity, making plants less susceptible to disease and therefore less in need of pesticides.
Plant pathogens, fungi, oomycetes, bacteria, and viruses cause lots of damage to our plants and to our crops. They cause that damage in many cases after the water has been spent to grow the crop, so plant diseases are water losses as well. And it's very clear that as we need to feed more and more people on less land with less chemicals, that we're going to need to know how the plant immune system works and how we as biologists and plant breeders can help it work better.
For some background on this topic, can you describe a plant's immune system?
The plant immune system is actually extremely sophisticated. If you think about it, plants have a problem. They can't run away and hide. They're stuck in one place for their entire life. And so this means they have to be able to sense their environment very carefully, both the abiotic environment, light, soil nutrients, water, and also the biotic environment. So a plant can't avoid being bombarded by fungal pathogens or having bacteria migrate to its roots through the soil. So a plant has to be able to have a very exquisite surveillance system at all times. And the other constraint that animal immunologists probably wouldn't consider, plants have no circulating cells, so that the surveillance system has to function, in essence, in every cell, in every tissue, because any of those cells might be the target of an evolved microbe. The plant immune system has to tell the difference between a commensal or mutualist or symbiotic microbe and a dangerous microbe.
So, essentially, the plant needs to tell a difference between friend and foe at the molecular level. How then does a pathogen reprogram a plant's gene expression patterns to increase its own fitness?
So, successful pathogens have evolved ways to block or dampen or suppress that pattern recognition receptor mediated defense response. They do this by delivering proteins to the inside of the plant cell. Pretty astounding, actually, that everything from bacteria, fungi, oomycetes, aphids, and nematodes, which are all major classes of plant pathogens, have evolved independently ways to deliver proteins to the inside of a plant cell. Once inside the plant cell, those proteins, which we call effector proteins, they do things to plant host machinery that makes the environment better for the pathogen. And so the first issue is they suppress the ongoing defense response. They also, secondly, can make the plant produce proteins that provide nutrients to the outside the cell organism, to the microbe that's living in between plant cells. And finally, they can also help the pathogen disperse. So there's a huge diversity, a wonderful and fascinating diversity of effector proteins made by all classes of plant pathogens that essentially slow down or block the first layer of the plant's immune system. So obviously, if that were true, then there'd be no food and no resistant plants because the pathogens would win. So the plants have evolved a second tier of receptors that actually act inside the cell to sense the molecules that the pathogens deliver inside the cell. And these molecules are called nucleotide binding leucine rich repeat receptors, or NLR for short. So once the NLR receptor senses the presence of a specific effector protein, then the output system is rebooted and plant defense response goes forward to stop pathogen growth. So you can imagine that this game goes back and forth over and over again.
So unlike humans, plants don't have immune cells just circulating around looking for infections. Rather, each cell has disease-resistance proteins in order to combat infection. So what are scientists doing to locate and investigate these genes?
The paradigm so far has been we use genetics to make a genetic map by crossing a resistant parent and a susceptible parent and challenging it with pathogens. And then in the last 20 years, people have been able to use genomics-based tools to do positional cloning of disease resistance genes. But this, as you can imagine, requires very good genomics resources in the target species. And so the great unsung heroism of the last 25 years in plant biology has been that we now have genomics kits for a huge majority of the most important crop species. And one of the great applications of those genomics kits is to the isolation of disease resistance genes.
In terms of combating plant pathogens and food security, can you give an example where adding these disease resistance genes might prove useful?
Crop disease has been a problem for a long time in a lot of places around the world. The one that most of your readers and listeners are likely to be familiar with is the potato late blight epidemic in Ireland in the 1840s, which caused millions of people to be uprooted and many of them emigrated to the U.S. Millions of people died. And so that late blight pathogen is called Phytophthora infestans. Phytophthora is still a major disease in tomatoes and peppers and potatoes. In Europe, for example, where people grow and eat lots of potatoes, it's very difficult to control Phytophthora, even to this day. It's done so by chemicals that nobody likes. Those chemicals were mostly listed for being banned in the EU many years ago. They're given a year-by-year reprieve because there's simply no other solution. So that's one real-world example where isolation of disease-resistance genes from wild potatoes or relatives of potatoes would be a perfect case where a genetically modified potato would replace the use of pretty nasty chemicals.
Right. So although we're talking about changes at the micro level, it can have macro level consequences. How is this method of developing disease resistance an environmentally sustainable option?
It's imperative that we grow our food in a sustainable way and that we do so with less chemical input. The example I gave earlier, late blight in potato, in Europe, there are currently anywhere from 25 to 50 sprayings, and so if you can reduce that by tenfold, down to two or three sprays per season with a genetic solution, I think that's a huge win for environmentalists. In fact, it's hard to be an environmentalist and not embrace genetically modified technology for trading in genetic technology for chemical use. So I think this is a hugely important issue.
Then what are some of the challenges of implementing the next generation of disease-resistance crop? Because it is increasing the plant's immunity, and it is environmentally sustainable. But are there consumer anxieties or regulatory hurdles?
I think there are both. To register a transgenic plant in the U.S. takes many millions of dollars and many years to get through the regulatory process. So the regulatory burden is quite high. But this technology in general around disease resistance is aimed squarely at replacing chemical use. And I think that the best way to do it at large scale is by careful deployment of mixed genotypes of different disease resistances. We're now at a point where we understand the immune system in plants enough to be able to think about and propose and carry through real translational experiments and translational research programs.
Okay, well, Jeff Dangle, thank you for talking with me.
All right, Christy, thank you.
Jeff Dangle writes about manipulating plant immune systems in this week's special issue of Science.